The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. The views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
So we say, we always say to Black Panther Party that they can do anything they want to do. We might not be back, I might be in jail, I might be anywhere. But when I leave, you remember I said with the last words on my lips, I am a revolutionary.
Revolution comes with a price tag. You a slave to a flag in a country that clearly doesn't love you when they probably never have. Told you turn the other cheek and they met it with a bat. Fucking protesting them citizens. Told you go fight in the war. Vietnam, you died, good riddance. The man of the house rule took you from your siblings. Turned around and pump crack right up when you did it. And they turned all your leaders to martyrs. You was off in the war, now who was guarding your daughters? It was riots in the streets, killed Malcolm and Martin. Called the National Guard up because we ride with our guard up. And that was blood in your garden. Second Amendment don't apply to you. Everything that they taught you was a lie to you. See, they scared of your skin and they dying to shoot. Take the American dream and then you die to pursue.
One day it'll all make sense. If it ain't about power, then it don't make sense. But none of that money matters when you live in madness. The one that you figure out that all you got is this. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger.
For those of you who don't know the pain, the government was slinging out the
pain. Good afternoon. Welcome to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind the enemy lines that I call USA Inc. Today's date, it is a Tuesday. It's a Tuesday afternoon, a particularly warm Tuesday afternoon here in North Carolina. Trying not to turn on the central air because you know how that drives up the electric bill. But I tell you, it's starting to get a little toasty in here. May have to go ahead and turn that on. But today's date is April the 19th, 2016. Broadcasting from North Carolina. I love this state in terms of I just love the people who I live around. I just love this little quiet area that I live in. Today, I want to talk about something that is, in my opinion, is very, very serious. It's something that has been on my mind over the past couple of days. It started with the article from a social psychologist by the name of Veronica Y. Womack, who I have contacted and hope to get her on the program to get further information from her research. She is a research associate at Northwestern University's Feinberg School of Medicine. And she penned this article titled, Respectability Politics Are Making Black Americans Sick, meaning literally making them sick. And we've had this whole, you know, running debate, I don't know for how long, probably, I don't know, decades and what have you, of this notion of respectability politics. You have to engage in respectability politics. And just to borrow a little bit from her article, which I'll get into later, saying that if we're respectful in the way that we, you know, attack the system or fight for equal rights and things of that nature, if we dress a certain way, if we talk a certain way, you know, that everything, you know, will go a whole lot smoother and what have you. I'm also creating a new term called respectability counter racism. All right. Because this is something that I have noticed for the past, 8 years. Since I've been exposed to various counter-racist proposals, counter-racist I was about to say theology, but strategy and whatnot. And a lot of it is very similar. I shouldn't say a lot of it. Some of it that I have come across, I think is very similar to respectability politics, which, again, puts the onus on the victims, saying that, you know, it, without saying it, what they are saying is that if you don't dress a certain way, if you don't act a certain way, then these things wouldn't be happening to you. And that just does not measure up to the evidence. It just really doesn't. And I think it's also reinforcing white supremacy when we put the onus on victims to conform to standards set by white supremacy. So I want to talk a little bit about that again. You know, this piece, Respectability Politics, Are Making Americans Sick, that was published by Veronica Y. Womack. Again, she's a black woman, a social psychologist and research associate at Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine. You know, I just really thank her for this article. All right, I really, really do. Speaking of respectability ideology, I want to point out a story that is relevant to racism, the system of racism and white supremacy and respectability ideology is doing nothing to prevent people from becoming victims of racism. North Carolina minister and the leader of the NAACP here on the state level of North Carolina, he has also been leading the Moral Mondays. I don't know if they still have those going on. I haven't been seeing anything come across the local news wires, but I know for a very long time, for at least a year, you know, there were huge rallies in Raleigh, North Carolina, which is the seat of power in state politics here in North Carolina. And they was having these rallies, a bunch of coalitions, people of different walks, different faiths, different classifications, coming together to oppose the Republican-controlled political system. They were able to capture all of the state offices and whatnot. They pretty much running everything here in North Carolina. But this man, who I have a great deal of respect for, I met him one time. He attended a press conference that I was at, and, you know, I've been following him over the years, and I have nothing but the utmost respect for Reverend Barber's name. Yeah, Minister Reverend Barber here in North Carolina, a very respectable, quote unquote, black man here in North Carolina who is not afraid to stand up to the white supremacist powers that be in this state, and very respectful, very codified in his own right. And despite his respectable position here in North Carolina, despite his codification and what have you, he was a victim recently of racism when he got kicked off of a airline flight after he had some words with a racist passenger. And, you know, he was codified in his language in addressing the verbal abuse that was being directed his way by a man who was sitting directly behind him and what have you. And again, for all his respectability, all of his codification and his speech and actions toward this racist passenger, he still got kicked off the flight. So I mean, that's exhibit number one right there. Okay, so I want to talk about that. Of course, New York, I'm not sure if any other states are voting in the Republican and Democratic primaries today, but I know New York, a long anticipated primary is being held today in New York, and they are experiencing a whole lot of voter disenfranchisement. I read an article about tens of thousands of people being purged from the voters' rolls in Brooklyn. They were Democrats. And also in other places in the state. Also, I just want to point out that while a lot of Democrats like to point out how voters are being disenfranchised in southern states, one of them being the state that I live in, North Carolina, which has a lawsuit before the Supreme Court right now. I haven't read anything about them ruling on it or saying, you know, it's been struck down or what have you. I haven't heard anything like that. But, you know, we often hear the rhetoric that in the Deep South, and what have you. You know, a lot of voter disenfranchisement is being practiced against primarily people of color, black people, other non-white people, young people, even older people are being disenfranchised in these states. But New York can hardly be considered, obviously it's not in the South, and it is considered to be a so-called quote-unquote blue state, meaning that, you know, Democrats pretty much run that state. They hold most of the elective offices are you know, in power. I believe Cuomo, I'm not sure if Cuomo is a Democrat or not. I know Hillary Clinton definitely took a photo op with him. I can't imagine she would be doing that with a Republican. So I think Cuomo is a Democrat and what have you. So, but regardless of that, you still got voter disenfranchisement going on. The Nation published an article today that says that New York, well, they didn't say it. They, you know, reported to this politician or this lawyer for fighting for North Carolina to keep its new voter ID laws in place and what have you. But he said, you know, he used New York as his example of, hey, North Carolina voting laws are a whole lot more progressive than New York. You know, and he just named off a couple of things. And guess what? He's right. He's right. He is definitely right about that. All right, so those are some of the main stories that I would like to share with you today on Black Talk Radio News. But before I get to those stories, I also just want to take a quick scan of our various news feeds that we have on social media. You can follow us at Black Talk Radio on Twitter, Black Talk Radio Network on Facebook. We have a number of other pages that we also manage, but those are the two main pages where you get a lot of information from us. Also, how you can find out about upcoming live programming and what have you. So I will definitely take a quick scan of the news to share some information with you that I think is important that you should be aware of. 641-715-3660, participant code 549032 pound. Is the conference line number. Anytime you would like to speak, you're more than welcome to hang out and listen on that line. But if you, anytime you want to speak, just hit *6 and 1 to come in on air. Take advantage of the web-based flash phone in case, you know, you don't got any minutes on your phone or whatnot, but you got a pair of headsets and you got internet connection. So hit us up with the flash phone and make it a free call into the program. Also, the studio line will be open because I'm seeing it's not open. I forgot to open up the studio lines. I'm going to go ahead and do that now. That telephone number is 704-951-5030. Again, that's 704-951-5030 is the studio line. It will be open here shortly. So let's go ahead and just take a scan of the different news items that have been shared with you on some of our social media pages. Yesterday, if y'all caught Tando Radio Show, which airs on the network Monday through Friday at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, one of the topics that they were discussing or some of the news that was being brought up was this 9/11 bill that's making its way through Congress that would allow victims of the families of the 9/11 terror attacks that occurred in New York. Other places, Washington, I'm not sure if it was Washington, D.C. I think that was Pennsylvania where that one plane got shot down. Oh, I mean, the passengers rose up and, you know, took control and from the terrorists and crashed. At least that's the official story. But evidence that a lot of people have put forth would suggest that plane was shot down. OK, but anyway, I'm not even going to get into the conspiracy of 9/11, but there is a bill in Congress that would allow the victims' families to sue Saudi Arabia, the royal family, members of the Saudi Arabian government, which, you know, everybody that has a position in the government is a member of the so-called quote-unquote royal family. So anyway, you know, like they were saying yesterday on Tando Radio Show, talking about, you know, if this bill passes, then Saudi Arabia is going to sell off billions of dollars of U.S. Treasury bonds that it holds. I tell you, man, people think that the United States is safe and secure or whatnot. I tell you, man, you got China holding a huge amount of their treasury notes and what have you, treasury bonds, whatever they're called. Now I'm finding out that Saudi Arabia also holds a huge amount of U.S. treasury bonds and whatnot. And if any time they could harm the U.S. economy, if they just got rid of those things. Again, you could check out the archives of Tando Radio Show. Brother Dave is very informative when it comes to financial issues, much, much better than I am, way more informed than I am on these financial issues and whatnot. But this just in, and I want to thank Sandy, you know who you are, I'm not going to say your last name, for tagging me in this post, but I had heard yesterday that President Obama, the CEO of USA Inc., was on his way to Saudi Arabia. And from there, he was going to go visit some other countries on, you know, official business of USA Inc. And now there's this article that's coming out from the New York Post that says that President Obama plans to veto that bill that would allow 9/11 families to sue Saudi Arabia. Okay, but I didn't hear any kind of protest from him. When these families sued Iran over 9/11, and Iran didn't have a darn thing to do with 9/11. Neither did, you know, Saddam Hussein, even though the Bush administration lied about it and whatnot, didn't have nothing to do with it. No, it all points, all the evidence points to Saudi Arabia, all right? And, you know, they blacked out a whole bunch or redacted a whole huge sections of the so-called 9/11 report and what have you. And a lot of people who have seen, and I'm talking about elected officials who had a security clearances to see that without sharing too much information, they have relayed as much as possible that Saudi Arabia had a lot to do with the 9/11 attacks, almost as much as the Bush administration, I would suspect, but who allowed it to happen. But yeah, so the CEO of USA Inc. is going to protect his Sunni friends over there in Saudi Arabia, and he's threatening to sue, to block or veto the bill that would allow the Americans who were affected by the 9/11 attacks to sue people who played a huge role in, you know, that horrific event that occurred. So that's a story you might want to check out. There's also a video. This goes back to the program. I had a listener ask me to do a program on superdelegates, and I did that program, and I share information on that. But I came across a new video today. What are superdelegates? U.S. elections 2016. That again is on our Black Talk Radio Network Facebook page. Take a look at that if you want to get more information about that. Let's see, what else did we share? We shared something from Roland Martin about Utah's senator and a U.S. senator. Okay, so he's in the U.S. Senate. We're not talking about a Utah state senator, but he is blocking a $220 million bill that would provide funds to resolve or go towards repairing the people harmed by the Flint water crime that occurred. And although it has disappeared from the corporate media news feeds and what have you, although Roland Martin is a part of the corporate media, you know, he still has some autonomy, it seems, okay? You know, I'm not going to say that he is in total control of this program, but I have noticed that Roland Martin does talk about a lot of important issues and what have you. So anyway, he published a video on segment. He posted a video of a segment on his program on News One, so you might want to check that out. You know, he's saying that you can also call this person's office. Again, this is Senator Mike Lee, who's blocking $220 million in federal funds to go towards repairing the people harmed in the Flint water crime. You can call his office at 435. This is his state offices at 435-628-5514. That's 435-628-5514. Or you can call 801-524-5933. That again is 801-524-5933. And say, release the money for the Flint water crisis. I call it a Flint water crime because that was criminal negligence that occurred. I heard Judge Mathis even call it a state-sponsored terrorist attack on the people of Flint. And he's a judge, so he should know, right? I'm just kidding. Anyway, also, I didn't have a chance to watch this. I'm hoping that they saved the video, but the White House has a habit of not saving the videos to their live streams, I have observed. But they had a forum today talking about increasing access to justice. I mean, just the language there. I mean, what are they talking about? You know, I bet you they ain't talking about overthrowing racism and white supremacist slave codes and what have you. No, they ain't talking about abolishing slavery. They just talking about reforming it so the slavers don't lose too much money. But they, I don't know what it was about. All I know, I came across it. I did not have time to watch it because I was busy doing something else at the time. But I did post a video. The White House forum on increasing access to justice. I can tell you if they saved it right now. Let me go ahead and check this. But I suspect they did not because they usually don't.
Violence and corrupt.
Okay, it's actually still going on live. But again, I'm not going to watch it right now. Anyway, another story that I want to share with you. And this kind of intersects with the story I was talking about in terms of all of these voters being disenfranchised in New York. We saw the same thing in Arizona. Now we're seeing it play out in New York. I think the media did an excellent job of suppressing similar information here in the state of North Carolina because I did not really hear a lot of stories about voter suppression or a lot of people, you know, not being able to vote. I had no problems. Me and my daughter went together. Had no problems. We was in and out in 5 minutes. That's all it took, was 5 minutes. Okay. My mom went and voted later, you know, that day. She didn't report any problems or whatnot. But I have heard from some other people that there were some problems here in North Carolina related to that new voter ID law. But, you know, this is a pattern. This is a pattern in practice. And I know, you know, and I ain't trying to argue with people and I'm not trying to change your viewpoint. Well, that's not necessarily true, but I'm just going to state my opinion. It is my opinion that, you know, for those who say that your vote doesn't matter or voting doesn't matter and it's not worth your time and I just wasted 5 minutes of my day. Well, we'll say 10 minutes. It took me 5 minutes to drive to the poll and 5 minutes to get in there and, you know, check off the boxes for the primary and who I wanted to see get a nomination or what have you. So 10 minutes total it took me. You know, you might feel like I wasted 10 minutes of my life that I ain't never going to get back or whatnot. But it just seems to me that they spend an awful lot of time, resources, and money in trying to stop people from voting. So it just doesn't seem logical to me that they would expend all of this effort for something that ain't gonna matter in to begin with. It just doesn't add up. Do they steal elections? Of course, but you know, I kind of think that, you know, it has to be something of value in order for somebody to want to steal it. So the focus should not be on telling people not to vote or telling them that they vote don't matter. The focus should be pending revolution. Let me go ahead and throw that out there. Pending a revolution and an overthrow of the system of racism that perpetuates white supremacy through politics. Okay. Barring you know, the collapse of that or something like that, you know, or until we can get reach critical mass of people who really want to go out there and implement a system based on justice instead of one based on slavery. Pending all of that, then what we should be directing people to do is become more involved at the local level, because everything starts locally. Whether we're talking about the federal government, these people came from a local area somewhere near you, you know, and whatnot. So we should be trying to come up with countermeasures on how to stop them from stealing elections, stop them from disenfranchising of voters. You know, that's just how I feel about it. But I'll get more into that, details of all of these voters being disenfranchised in New York. I suspect that the bulk of them are non-white people. I just have this sneaky feeling that that's who's being shut out of the ballot box. But I could be wrong. Maybe it's a bunch of white people, but I just don't think so. Los Angeles, here's another video. Los Angeles school gets gender neutral toilet. And it, you know, this goes to a conversation that I was having with several family members yesterday, because y'all may have known that North Carolina passed this bill. I actually reported on it. What was it? House Bill number 2, HB 2, as it's known here in the state of North Carolina, that says that, you know, you have to use the bathroom that is according to the gender assigned to you on your birth certificate. Now, so we were talking about that yesterday. What got us talking about it, we was watching the local news, and this person who I actually thought was a man, I mean, had on, you know, a business suit and what have you, looked like a professional, really neat cut hair and what have you. You know, I thought it was a man, but it was a woman. It was a woman. And she was talking about, obviously, this is a person who identifies as a man, although biologically it's a woman. But she was saying, this is how I dress. This is my presentation to the world, and it is a presentation of a man. All right. So now you're forcing me to go into a bathroom with this presentation. You're making me go to the woman's bathroom where some of them women might not know that I'm biologically a woman, and then they're going to call the police on me. And I'm telling you, if you saw this person, you would not have guessed. And I got a pretty good eye for that, for those sort of things. You know, on just looking at that person, you wouldn't have been able to tell. You just would have thought it was a pudgy black man and what have you. You wouldn't have been able to tell. Now, if you listen closely to, you know, her speech and what have you, you know, the tone that she was using, you might be able to pick up that, you know, this is either a woman or an effeminate man or something like that. So, like my daughter was saying, she was like, this is just stupid. This ain't doing nothing but causing a bunch of confusion and focusing people's time on something that ain't going to amount to nothing. Ain't going, and not her words, but my words is, how is that going to change the dynamic of racism and white supremacy that we facing here in North Carolina? It just doesn't. Okay, and you know, they come up with this gender neutral toilet in Los Angeles schools' largest districts, and the kids seem to be fine with it. And they even shows them all in the bathroom of every gender, you know, washing their hands. Obviously, it had stalls and whatnot. I didn't see any urinals in there, you know, that are built for men, but men use toilets too. And they had these stalls. I don't know if they had urinals in the stalls where people could have, you know, a little privacy and whatnot. But, you know, this is what my daughter was talking about yesterday in other countries. And I've said the same thing. Other countries, this is not an issue. They have gender neutral facilities. They have gender neutral facilities. Don't matter. Go in there, do your business. Go in there, pee, whatever you got to do, and get out. And get out. So, you know, but the thing here in with HB2 here in North Carolina is they snuck in that bill is that you can't sue in state courts, or they make it harder for you to sue, would be more accurate for me to say. They just make it more difficult for you to sue to file discrimination lawsuits in court. And that's discrimination of any kind. They don't want to hear it. They don't want, you know, they making it difficult for us to seek recourse or seek reparations when we have been harmed by discrimination. And I'm talking specifically about black people, because you know that's who they was targeting it at when they snuck that bill in, that portion or that amendment into the bill. So L.A. schools gets gender neutral toilet at this high school. And it was actually a student-led campaign. The students did this. So, thought that was interesting. Let me see. The farms of the future could be underwater. I posted a video where they're talking about revolutionizing food production using previously untapped spaces to grow kelp, scallops, and mussels to grow seafood and what have you. So check that out. I thought that was pretty interesting. I would not recommend that if you're on the Pacific Ocean with all that Fukushima radiation and what have you. I would not recommend this, but I thought it was pretty interesting. And it also prompted me to post on the page for today a link to the ultimate guide to home aquaponic systems. And all full disclosure, I do have an affiliate relationship with this company, and so any purchases of this book would go towards the Black Talk Media Project. I should say not I, but the Black Talk Media Project as an organization has an affiliate relationship with this company. So any purchases of this book, a portion of the proceeds will go to funding independent black media through the Black Talk Media Project. It's called The Ultimate Guide to Home Aquaponics System. It's an easy to understand guide that shows you how to set up a home aquaponics system from scratch and make it produce more than 154 pounds of fresh vegetables and 89 pounds of adult fish with your very first system. Even if you don't know anything about aquaponics. And I have been interested in aquaponics for a very long time, since it was brought to my attention some years ago. I actually have not set up a system, but I think that I need to start that in preparedness for whatever happens. You know, Tando Radio Show again, which is one of the more popular programs on the Black Talk Radio Network's digital radio station, Black Talk Radio. They talk a lot about preparedness, a lot about survival. And this, just when I saw that other video about using, you know, the ocean to grow edible plants, because they say it's a lot of plants in the ocean that are edible that, you know, a lot of people are not even utilizing as a food source. And then, of course, they were talking about mussels and scallops and whatnot. But this particular system, it is, you don't need to be on the ocean. All right. You're going to need to buy some materials. Obviously, you're going to need a source of water, obviously, but you can grow vegetables and fish. And I thought that, you know, that would be a good thing to have in terms of, you know, planning for whatever may happen with the world economy in such flux right now. Never know what's going to happen. And even then, you know, if you're a poor person, you don't have a whole lot of resources, you living in poverty, but, you know, you may have some space in your home, some space outside of your home to where you can create an aquaponic system to grow fresh vegetables and what have you, and even raise fish. You know, I heard a lot of people, you know, that are not meat eaters, but they will partake in fish. There's a particular name for that. I forget it. So anyway, I thought, you know, I would share that today with you in light of that video. Let me see. Also, here's another story. You can also find this on New Abolitionist Radio's Facebook page. As of Monday, April the 18th, that's yesterday, prisoners, new slaves in Texas have been on rolling labor strikes for 2 weeks. The Texas Department of Criminal Justice is retaliating by locking the prison down and depriving prisoners of even the standard abysmal human necessities they are forced to provide. Retaliation against people who refuse to work for free is one of the tools prison administrators use to assure that prisoners can continue to be exploited in today's modern day slave system. All right, and that it was posted by one of my media partners that works in the area of addressing the issue of political prisoners. New York City Jericho Movement published that. I shared it on New Abolitionist Radio's Facebook page as well as Black Talk Radio's Facebook page, because they have some phone numbers and a script that if you want to support this slave rebellion, and doing the very least that you can do is to make a couple of phone calls and read these scripts. For example, here's an easy script. Hi, I'm calling in support of striking prisoners in Texas and their demands for good time, an end to $100 medical copays, an independent grievance procedure, and an end to human rights abuses. How is that Obamacare working out for prisoners? Wow, doesn't seem like it's working, does it? Stop enslaving our brothers and sisters and assure that your staff is not retaliating against striking workers by giving them write-ups. Eyes on Texas. Here is another script. They said, hi, I heard about the prisoner labor strike, and I'm calling to find out what sort of progress you are making toward meeting the prisoners' demands. So it also gives links to the list of prisoners' demands and what have you. So, you know, please, if you're so inclined, because I ain't begging you to do nothing. I don't beg people to do anything. You know, either you're going to do it or you ain't going to do it. Either you for slavery or you against it. There is no middle ground and whatnot. So if you're so inclined to be empathetic towards modern day slaves on the prison plantation, please share this information and make that phone call if you're so inclined. All right. Thank you to those that do. All right. Let's see. That's about it that I want to share. There's more. Oh, yeah. Here's an article. This was a good read. Y'all should check out this article. Why I'm not here for Hillary Rodham Clinton at Black Girls Rock. I'll share a little portion of that, but you really need to read this whole article because I thought it was very on point. But here is an excerpt that I took from the article. Said Hillary Clinton entered into a standing ovation from all the black women who were there to be celebrated and elevated. The symbolism of a white woman who lobbied for and supported her husband's policies, which saw many black women incarcerated for years for nonviolent first-time drug offenses, were cheered as she took center stage at an event lauded as an exclusive celebration of the power and wondrous spirit of black women and girls, is gut-wrenchingly ironic. So she's basically talking about a white supremacist invading what was billed as a safe space for black women and girls. But of course, BET is not owned, and it might be managed by some black people, but it ain't owned by black people. It is owned by Viacom, one of the largest of the big six media companies in this country. And they certainly probably feel an obligation to the Clintons, since the Clintons passed the 1996 Telecommunication Act, which led to less independent ownership of media by black people and consolidated 95% of all media, whether you're talking about television, whether you're talking about radio, and whether you're talking about print, magazine, even if you're talking about stuff online. Six companies control 95% of all that, and BET is one of those spaces that they control. So I wasn't surprised that she got an invite to come there. She probably called in a marker or something, called in, you know, a favor. Hey, me and Bill helped y'all become the media giant that you are, even helped you take over a black independent media network and turn it into garbage. But, you know, yeah, we helped you, so now it's time for you to help me. Let me go pander, do this photo op in front of all these black women. And, you know, a lot of those black women, they probably was being polite in their applause of her and what have you. But if you look at the photographs of the audience, many of them, the look on their faces was like, you know, what the hell is this woman doing here? I thought this was for us black women and black girls to celebrate our warriors among us. And here they bring in this white supremacist who has done all this harm to black people. So that's the vein of that article, which was published on Ebony.com. I'm not sure if Ebony is still in black hands or not. I'm talking about black ownership or not. I'm not sure. Okay, so anyway, it was a very good read in my opinion, so check that out if you have an opportunity. All right, so let me go ahead and take a station identification break, and let me jump into the main topic about respectability politics and counter-racism that reinforces white supremacy. All right, hope to have some dialogue. Again, agreement isn't always necessary, just respect. And if you don't agree with me, I'm not sensitive. I don't be like, oh, you attacking me because, you know, you don't agree with what I'm saying and you're above reproach. And you know, no, man, everybody should be questioning everything and everyone. All right. We all are human beings and we are prone to make mistakes. And so, you know, it is no sense of us keep repeating failed strategy after failed strategy or promoting failed strategies after failed strategies that there's no evidence to suggest that they are even logical, and certainly no evidence to suggest being a respectable Negro, as they call it, has done anything to stop racism from being practiced against the victims of racists. So definitely want to get into that. I think it's a very serious topic because I feel like, you know, in certain areas, we are not being serious. So you're listening to Black Talk Radio News, broadcasting on Black Talk Radio Network. We'll be right back on the other side.
Our people are very serious about not being very serious.
Make Black Talk Radio your choice for digital black radio. New black media for the new millennium.
I scratched up.
Let's jump into this topic. Let me go ahead and pull up this article. Respectability politics are making black Americans sick. Again, I have come up with a new term. I do value the work of counter-racist Neely Fuller Jr. I don't always agree with him on everything, but I think Most of the stuff I have heard him say is constructive, and I think it's, you know, he puts forth a great survival guide in terms of surviving on the plantation. All right. So he, you know, encourages people to come up with their own terms. So borrowing off of respectability politics, which is, you know, a lot of people have heard of that term. I'm coming up with the term respectability counter racism, because I have observed speech. I have observed strategies that are no different, are saying nothing no different than what those who preach respectability politics state. And in my opinion, it teaches non-white people, primarily black people, that it's the way that they look, speak, and act that causes them to become victims of racism. Instead of putting the onus on the speech, thoughts, and the acts of the racist, which is the problem. All right, so I want to go ahead and pull up this article. I have linked to this article. It is published on QZ.com. Quartz is the name of the website. It is under Blame Game. Respectability politics are making black Americans sick. This was written by Veronica Womack. I have reached out to her, just reached out to her today. Hopefully we can get her on later this week. If not, maybe next week. If, you know, should she accept our invitation? A lot of people don't accept invitations to come on Black Talk Radio. So, you know, but we will keep our fingers crossed, because I think she has some very constructive information coming from a social psychologist perspective, because she is a black woman. She's a social psychologist and a research associate at Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine. So let's go ahead and jump into her article. She doesn't beat you over the head with a whole bunch of words and whatnot and big words and what have you. She just simply gets to the point. All right. It's not a 500 word article or anything like that. It's probably less than 200. So, you know, won't take you that long to read it. Anyway, again, they put this under the Blame Game. The just world belief has real health consequences for black Americans. Pull up your pants, straighten your hair, stop using the N-word. Black Americans have long been told that there is a right way to act in order to secure racial equality and individual promotion in the United States. Often these recommendations are made by other black Americans attempting to mute certain cultural aesthetics in order to make white Americans feel comfortable in their presence. I recently attended a lecture where a middle-aged black American man explained that he yearned for the days when black men had, quote-unquote, grace. He posted a picture of black men circa 1940 in Tuckasegee, Alabama. Is that where they were shooting them up with syphilis and what have you? Practicing medical apartheid on them, even though, you know, they wearing suits and ties and all that. He posted a picture of black men circa 1940 in Tuckasegee, Alabama, standing in a cotton field wearing pressed white shirts and suspenders. As journalist Arwen Squire explains, black respectability presumes that systemic oppression can be overcome if we're clean, mild, moderate, and economically successful. Yet, in a time when black men are 9 times more likely to be shot and killed by the police, and people still protest those who point out police brutality, policing the appearance of black Americans is, at best, beside the point. So the victim blaming. And again, some of these people, some of these people are coming from a place of care, of love. They don't want to see this happen to people, and they're making a suggestion. I don't think that they have, you know, nefarious motives, and they're just victim blaming just to be victim blaming. I think that, like many of us, they just don't know. They just don't know what to do. Everything that we tried, they just keep practicing racism against us. So, you know, they just, I don't know. I don't know. If we look at the historical record, regardless of how black people dress, how black people speak, how educated, doesn't matter the level of education, they still got lynched, they still got shot, they still got raped, they still got robbed, they still got exploited, or what have you. So I just don't understand why someone can say that unless they haven't taken a serious look at the evidence and explored, you know, anything out there that would support such a position. So anyway, let me continue with the article. She says, but the issue isn't just that respectability is irrelevant. New evidence suggests that the beliefs that inform respectability politics are bad for black Americans' health. Now, I was just writing about this before I even read this article, where I was talking about the stress that black people live and other non-white people live under a system predicated upon racism, all right? And you know, they have PTSD. That's why a lot of them smoke weed. And interestingly, researchers have now shown, and doctors are prescribing cannabis to people who come back from war zones suffering from PTSD, says that it really alleviates the suffering that they are on. But I hear people, you know, point to cannabis use in a way that they suggest to you that your using cannabis is somehow incorrect and it's causing you to become victims of racism and what have you. Or, you know, they come up with, you know, they engage in these 1930s propaganda talking points. Again, check out Reefer Madness. That's on YouTube. They turn it into a movie, and they just basically promote outdated information, unscientific information, okay, in order to suggest that, oh, you suffering because you smoke weed. That's why you suffering. That's why you can't get a job. That's why, you know, you having trouble raising your kids. This is why, you know, whatever. It's cause of, yeah, you smoking weed. If you just stop smoking weed, everything in the world would be okay. And, you know, you'd be able to better confront racism and white supremacy. Never mind the fact, you know, that perhaps confronting that is why they're stressed out and got PTSD in the first place. Anyway, let me continue on with this article. According to the Journal of Behavioral Medicine, attributing success to personal characteristics instead of biased structural systems may negatively impact black Americans' health. Now, this is talking about it's harming you. It's harming you. I'll read it. I don't know if they're talking about psychologically or physically or both, but I will continue. But they say it's negatively impacting black Americans' health. Let me see. Nao Hagawara and her colleagues at Virginia Commonwealth University explored whether the just world belief, the belief that the world is a just place where people get what they deserve, would influence the relationship between perceived discrimination and health consequences for 130 black adults. The psychologists found that participants who both strongly believed that the world was a just place and reported experiencing high levels of discrimination were more likely than other blacks to suffer from chronic illness and increased blood pressures. Why? Because respectability politics tells black Americans that what is happening to them in this country is our fault. In other words, we're to blame for the 9.5% unemployment rate among black Americans. Because, you know, if we didn't have earrings in our ears, we wasn't wearing afros and dreadlocks, we wasn't wearing dashikis to the interview or what have you, you know, just pick whatever, you know. If you wasn't doing all that, you wouldn't be suffering. All right. Goes on to say that, in other words, we're to blame for the 9.5% unemployment rate among black Americans. The police who fatally shoot unarmed black men, you know, because if you hadn't had your pants sagging off your behind, that cop wouldn't have noticed you. And, you know, he might have just passed you on by, but cause you were sagging a little bit, and you know, he saw that, you know, he was justified to get out of his car and shoot you. It's your fault cause you shouldn't have been sagging. And the teachers who expect less academic success from black students, if we just pulled up our pants a little higher and turned our music down, the systemic discrimination that informs nearly every sector of American life would disappear. If the world is just, then the injustice we experience in it is on us. This thought is literally making people sick. Healthcare and mental health practitioners should work to educate themselves on the current status of racial issues in the United States, and they should encourage their black patients to reframe how they look at their experiences. An understanding of individual accountability must be supplemented with a more contextual assessment of negative events. This reframing could alleviate the stress that's associated with the belief that our behavior determines all of our experiences, even in a deeply racist and unjust society. By seriously considering the social systems and racist encounters experienced by black Americans, health practitioners may help their patients better assess their experiences and select tailored methods for health improvement. Those charged with caring for black lives should be the first that acknowledge they matter. So again, this again was written by social psychologist and researcher Veronica Womack, who is a black woman. Now, I know that she's focusing on respectability politics. You know, when we've reported on it over the years. Look, I don't have to think that sagging pants is a good look. I don't have to agree with that. You know, there, I'm sure it was all throughout history, parents have not always liked different clothing styles of children and whatnot. But it's usually a fad that you know, changes with the times and whatnot. Not to mention who's promoting these styles to them or whatnot. But again, you know, I'm not for the sagging pants. But more importantly, I'm not for you being targeted, you being ticketed, you being jailed, and you being imprisoned. And people might sit up there and tell you that nobody's going to jail over sagging pants or going to prison over sagging pants. Well, I would point you to the state of Massachusetts, another, northern state that's not here in the deep south, where they passed legislation where you can get fined up to $300. You could do time in prison up to 3 years or spend 2 years in the county lockup for sagging pants. For sagging pants. So if that occurs to somebody, let's say they don't pay attention to politics, because a lot of people don't pay attention to politics because they think it's a waste of time. And therefore, they are not aware when these slave codes get put on the books. You know, for whatever reason, they're not paying attention. Maybe because they're 18, 19, 20 years old and you know, they just not in that activity. They're not paying attention to it. So, you know, they end up becoming victims of the new slave codes and what have you. So you're walking down the street and you're unaware of the new slave code on sagging pants and what have you. And next thing you know, you then got hemmed up by a slave catching cop who is portrayed in our communities, well, not so much in black community, but by corporate media as a respectable profession and what have you. These are respectable people and cops and, you know, with their press uniforms and whatnot. And, you know, that's a respectable job to have. And what have you. But I would ask you, who is more respectable? The young person who's not afraid to be himself? Because I certainly, when I was a young person, I was not afraid to express myself in my clothing, my hairstyle. And I just wasn't afraid. My vehicle and what have you that I bought myself, saved up for, bought it, fixed it up, what have you. You know, who's more respectable? respectable. The young person who is not going to conform to societal pressures as to what constitutes what's normal and what's not normal? Or is it the conformist, the person who has assimilated into the system and has taken a job as a modern day slave catcher? You know, he pays his taxes, he go to church on Sunday, but when he puts on that uniform and puts on that badge, he's patrolling for new slaves. Now, which is more respectable in your opinion? I would suggest to you the young person who's not afraid to express themselves, whether I agree with that expression or not, is more respectable than a tool of modern day slavery. I have no respect for slavers, none whatsoever. So, you know, but again, let me get back to, you know, this is usually expressed and she is focusing on politics. But because I'm a very observant person, I read a lot, I listen to a lot of different people because I'm always trying to gather information. I'm always trying to find out that which I do not know. I'm always trying to find out, well, will this work? Should I do this? Should I do that? So I'm always open to new information. But since I've been exposed to the counter-racist movement going back to 2000, I would actually say 2007, right before I started Black Talk Radio Network, that I have observed the same sort of language that says that, you know, if black men just pulled up their pants, then nothing would happen to them. You know, they would be able to, you know, be better fathers, be better this, be better that, and what have you, you know. And I don't mean to stay stuck on that example, but let me use a other example. If I had just conformed, if I just conformed by cutting my hair, by not growing dreadlocks as an ethnic expression of my blackness, if I had not grown dreadlocks and whatnot, I might be able to get a job. Well, actually, I did that. And I knew what I was doing. I was conforming. So I'm not blaming anybody. Didn't nobody put it into my mind or force me to conform or to assimilate. But I had just recently gotten custody of my two young daughters. And I just had two daughters at the time. My third daughter wasn't even born yet. Just gotten full custody of them. And I needed this job. I knew this job. My mom worked there. Great benefits, great pay. It was not what you call back-breaking work, where I got to use my brain, I got to use my computer skills and what have you. And so, you know, I was like, you know what? My mom warned me about the dude who was going to be interviewing me, the head of that department. She said, she told me that he's a white man and he's racist. She told me this. She told me this. And so when she told me this, I was like, man, I might need to cut my hair so I can get this job so I can provide for my family, you know. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to do that. I'm going to conform. I'm going to assimilate. I'm going to, you know, cut my hair and real short and what have you, you know, even though it shouldn't be an issue because I'm not like I'm going to be working around machinery with working gears that my hair could get caught up in. I'm not going to be working around preparing food or anything. I'm working with in an industrial dye lab, working with computers and dyes and you know, these little machines that, you know, does the dyeing and what have you, dyeing of the material and whatnot. So, I mean, I went on ahead and I cut my hair and I got that job. And I excelled so much in that job that I got promoted to take over the third shift supervision, you know. And I was doing good. I assimilated. It was working. But guess what happened, though? Guess what happened? And y'all might have heard this story from me before. True story. I ain't got no reason to lie to you. But when I was confronted with a situation where a black woman was being preyed upon by the vice president, who was a white male, classified self religiously as Jewish and whatnot. And I observed this man. I didn't say nothing, but I just observed him. Why every time we bring in these black female temp workers, you always off in a corner somewhere with them in a dark room or something, you know, laughing and joking with them and what have you. But I didn't say nothing. I was just observing. Hell, the black women wasn't complaining. Who am I to complain? I'm not. It's none of my business. Okay. Then this black woman who was a permanent worker, you know, regular worker and whatnot, who, you know, very friendly with my mom, very friendly towards me and whatnot, beautiful black woman, whatnot, you know, she will be classified as fine, as they, you know, as they say, you know, sister was definitely built like a brick house and what have you, very beautiful black woman and whatnot. But then when I got confronted with the situation where she was being sexually harassed by this powerful white supremacist with economic and political power at our company, you know, I had a decision to make when she asked me, because she knew I had witnessed him give her that porno tape and the lewd things that he was saying to her. And so when she had her attorneys call me to give a deposition, I had a decision to make. I could either keep my head down, keep my mouth shut, and play dumb, deaf, and blind, and be like, I got mouths to feed. I ain't, you know, looking for no trouble or anything like that. So I don't know why they calling on me. I didn't see nothing. I ain't hear nothing. I ain't in it. I ain't got nothing to do with it. But that's not how my mother raised me. My mother did not raise me to be a coward. She did not raise me, you know, to turn my back on people that's in need of help or anything like that. She raised me to be a compassionate, empathetic individual and you know, just to treat other people like how I would want to be treated. And I'm thinking about my daughters growing up and getting into the workforce and them being subjected to sick, you know, sadistic, you know, sexual predator and whatnot. And I would want somebody to come to their aid in their time of need. So, you know, it didn't take me no more than maybe 15 minutes to think about whether or not I want to give this attorney a call back and whatnot. And I thought about those things and I was like, you know what? I got to tell the truth. I got to tell the truth no matter what it's going to cost me. Personally, I got to tell the truth. So I told the truth, and it did cost me personally, but I have no regrets because my conscience is intact. I stood on principle. That is one black woman that will not be able to say when she needed a black man, the black man wasn't there for her to help her fight against this racist white male that was preying on her sexually. She won't be able to say that. Okay? But I certainly could have kept my head down and you know, not got involved in any of that. And it'd have been fine. I probably would still be working there to this day. Close to retirement, possibly. No, I would have been there 15 years, something like that. It's not always about our behavior. It's not always about our speech. It's not all about our diction. It's not about what we're wearing and what have you. It's just not all about that. A racist gonna practice racism just like a fish swims in water, just like birds fly in the air. They gonna practice it regardless of what kind of how you present yourself and whatnot, regardless of how you speak. It's not going to matter once you get in the crosshair of racists and white supremacists. And there is, in my opinion, a difference between racists and white supremacists. They're both white, obviously, but there's a difference. All right. So, you know, we had to stop victim blaming people and putting it all on them. Now, should we teach our children common sense? Should we be teaching them how to survive behind these enemy lines? Most certainly. Most certainly. But when we start suggesting, because people are not conforming to standards that have been set by the white supremacist who tells you how you should speak, how you should dress, what you should think, how to think, and all of that. When we come across people who will not conform, we should not blame them. We should not be putting the onus on them. Because they are being themselves. As long as they're not harming another individual, doing anything to directly harm another individual, how is racism being practiced against them their fault? It's not their fault. And I just feel like respectability politics and respectability counter-racism is counterproductive to countering the system of racism. In fact, it is not countering racism. It is helping to support racism. No, there's an old biblical scripture. Part of it says, so as a man thinks in his heart, so shall he be. If you think you have no power, if you think the only way you're going to make it is to succumb to white supremacy practices, standards, and what have you on how you should act, how you should talk, how you could speak. I mean, man, if you think that, then that's what it's going to be for you. White supremacists going to rule over you. They going to rule your speech. They going to rule your actions. They going to rule your mind. We have to be careful. While at the same time, we have to be real with people and we have to acknowledge clear and present dangers and what have you. But at the same time, we cannot be reaffirming the power of white supremacists over us. Again, that's a spiritual principle. I don't think everybody's going to get that or understand that. And that's okay. That's okay. Maybe one day they will as they study, you know, different areas. And hopefully they'll get into the area of spirituality and what have you. Because there are real spiritual laws that do work. I've seen it. I've seen the evidence that it does work. So, you know, we just have to be careful. We have to evaluate and reevaluate everything that we do. Because what might have worked back then ain't working today. It ain't working today. And I've never seen being a respectable Negro ever working. At no time since they erected white supremacy through the slave codes of the 1600s. I have never seen it. In fact, I mean, you see some of these pictures of black people, of victims who've been shot up, burned at the stake, lynched. Many of them are, they dressed. They might have on suits. They might have on starched shirts and all that. They might have on a Sunday dress or something like that. And it didn't stop it. They might have, you know, followed the code that said, don't look the white man in the eye. Get off the sidewalk when a white man is walking on the sidewalk. Don't get in arguments with white people and all this and that. Don't talk to Mr. Charlie like that. You know, don't do that. Don't do that, boy. You know, people did all those things. They did, you know, they followed that code. And guess what? They still suffer from racist terrorist attacks. Still got murdered. Still got enslaved. Just all kind of foul deeds happened to them, regardless of what they were doing. Regardless. So the onus shouldn't be on victims. The onus should be always on the white supremacists. The only time the onus should be on a quote unquote so-called victim, which I don't look at them as victims, is when we dealing with proxy racists. And a proxy racist is a non-white person who willingly aids racists. Who willingly aid white supremacists to harm other black people and non-white people who willingly practice injustice and what have you. And you know, all throughout history, you will find proxy racism is as prominent as other individual acts of racism. Proxy racism is a huge problem. American empire would not even exist today as it does without the help of black people fighting wars against other non-white people on the behalf of the white supremacists. And I really do not hear that particular code being promoted. And what code am I talking about? I'm talking about number one in my code book is don't help white supremacists harm other people under any circumstance. Don't even help a white supremacist to harm another white person. Don't do it. That should be number one. The number one stop. If you want to talk about a list of stops, whether we talking about Nita Fuller's 10 stops, whether we talking about the 10 commandments, whether we talking about, you know, the code that the Nation of Islam came up with, you know, whether we're talking about any of that. Number one should be don't be helping white supremacists. Do nothing, especially helping them to get away with harming other black people. That should be number one. If that ain't number one, then nothing else you is doing matters to me. It don't matter a hill. It don't make a hill of beans to me. You could be practicing everything else. You could be not squabbling, not killing, not stealing and whatnot. But if you helping white people, no, not white people. If you helping white supremacists harm other people, what is the point of following any of the rest? It isn't logical. So that should be your number one stop. Stop helping white racists practice racism because you're going to get rewarded for your treachery by them. That should be number one. Number one. So, I am attempting to bring on Dr. Veronica Womack. I should give her due. She's a doctor, although I ain't in the titles and all of that, but she's a doctor. She went to school. She got a university degree. She's a social psychologist and a research associate. Definitely have reached out to her because I think this deserves more exploration, that we should, you know, get deeper into this. Because, I mean, we suffering on so many levels that we don't need to be doing this self-inflicted harm to ourselves, where we're putting the onus on victims to change their behavior with the false notion to, you know, make them believe that if all black people just follow this code, then white supremacy will end. No, the hell it won't. There's nothing in history that would suggest that. Nothing. There's nothing you could point to and show me that would suggest that that's true. Regardless of your behavior, regardless of anything you're doing, once a racist gets his sights on you, ain't nothing you do say to that person, you know, is going to matter. It is not going to matter. That's been my experience. That has really been my experience. And the observations that I have made during my almost 50 years on this planet. Nothing that I have read over hundreds of years that would suggest that that's true. Again, you want one example I've used in the past, I'll use again. One of the most codified group of black people ever, you know, that I'm aware of, were operating in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Working together, you know, practicing cooperative economics, all of that. Respectable, nice homes. Dress nice, all of that, you know, they were really prospering. But did any of that stop them racists from burning Tulsa, Oklahoma down, from murdering all them respectable, nice-looking black folks. No, it didn't stop it. It did not stop it. So you know, this whole notion of keep perpetuating this myth that it's what we do that impacts racism or racists and how they treat us, it doesn't hold up to the smell test. It doesn't stand up to the evidence. And I just think it's insane to keep pushing the same strategy that has been pushed for hundreds of years. This ain't nothing new. That has proven to not have done anything to, you know, stop the system. Now, if you're infiltrating the system, if you're trying to infiltrate something, yes, you know, obviously you want to be codified. Obviously, you know, you want to not be yourself. You don't want to be your black self or whatnot. You want to be a red, white, and blue Negro. That's what you want to be. You're trying to infiltrate something and what have you, you know, then obviously there are certain things you need to do to infiltrate those circles. But I hope that your whole point of infiltrating is to gather intelligence on these people so that we can figure out how to dismantle, you know, the system and stop them from doing what they're doing. All right. I didn't mean to spend so much time on that, but I do get very passionate at times. And, you know, when I strongly believe something, and I like to base my beliefs off of evidence. I'm like a science-based person, you know. And I'm not just talking about, you know, chemistry and things of that nature, or, you know, astronomy or anything like that. I'm just saying that I'm a fact-based person. I want to see the results. Did this work? If it didn't work, then, you know, there ain't no sense of me putting it in my toolbox. This tool don't work. It's a useless tool, and I need room in my toolbox for tools that's actually gonna work. All right. And I don't need to be teaching my children a failed concept. Again, I tell my daughters, you know, you don't just dress any kind of way, but that ain't because of anything white supremacists are doing. So I'm not saying that we should be telling children it's okay to run around with your pants sagging. It's okay to get all these tattoos on your face and whatnot. It's okay to, you know, to just do stuff that we know is going to hamper their opportunities. But let us not say to them that if you do these things that you won't suffer racism. Or if enough of us do these things, then we can overthrow the system of racism. There's just no evidence to support that. None. So let me jump to this piece about, you know, along the same vein, but this story about Reverend William Barber the Third. I think he's the third. William Barber the Third. I got great respect for Minister Barber. You know, even if I don't like the shenanigans that goes on at the national headquarters of the NAACP, I have always acknowledged that I have come across people at the county level and the state level who are in that organization who I ain't got a problem with, who I think are doing excellent jobs in confronting, you know, the problems that black people face, you know, behind these enemy lines. And Reverend Barber is one of those people. Very respectable man and what have you. But unfortunately, his respectability, his codification didn't save him from getting kicked off an airplane. Didn't save him whatsoever. So I want to take a station identification break. I need a glass of water, actually. And then we'll come back. We'll talk about Reverend Barber and the act of racism that was practiced against him over the past couple of days. I hope he files a lawsuit If not, just to get an explanation from these races of why they kicked them off the plane and why they didn't kick off the races that was verbally bullying Mr. Barber. Okay, so you're listening to Black Talk Radio News. Again, my name is Scotty Reed, and I'm broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USAE. We'll be right back.
This is Brother Elliot, host of Time for an Awakening, and you're listening to Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennium.
Johnson, he can always raise an argument about law and order because he never talks about justice. But black people fall for that same argument and they go around talking about lawbreakers. We did not make the laws in this country. We are neither morally nor legally confined to those laws. Those laws that keep them up keep us down. You got to begin to understand that. For 400 years, he taught you white nationalism and you lapped it up. You taught it to your children. You had your children thinking that everything black was bad. Black cows don't give good milk. Black hens don't lay eggs. Black for funerals, white for weddings. That's white nationalism. Santa Claus. A white honky who slides down a black chimney and comes out white. We tend to equate progress with concession. We can no longer make that mistake. You see, when they gave us that nigga astronaut, you say we were making progress, but I told you they were going to lose him in space. He didn't get that far. You put Adam Clayton Powell in office and you couldn't keep him. What you think they're going to do with Thurgood Marshall when they get tired of him? They gave you Walter Washington of Washington, D.C., and you said we were making progress. That's not progress. See, it's no in-between. You're either free or you're a slave. There's no such thing as second-class citizenship. That's like telling me you can be a little bit pregnant.
Gentlemen, what brings me to my next point, don't smoke crack.
Crack is bad. Don't smoke the crack, you know, because it will definitely mess you up. I've seen it mess up some people, man, some good people. Don't smoke the crack, man. It has no medicinal benefits whatsoever. Don't do it. All right, so moving on to Reverend Barber. This is an article published. I saw it first here locally. On some of our local news media, but Atlanta Black Star also, they shared a little bit more details because, you know, it is a black owned, from what I've read, it is black owned, black operated. Ain't no white people controlling them, and they shared some details that was not shared in the white people's paper here in North Carolina. They didn't share these details. Anyway, this is the article that was published on AtlantaBlackStar.com. NAACP leader kicked off flight after face-to-face with racist passenger and he draws heat from the GOP. Let me tell y'all, man, these Republicans here, and Democrats too, but more so with these Republicans, you know, they are racist, man. At least when the Democrats was in power here in North Carolina, they tried to address systemic institutional racism. Some of the things that come to mind was the Racial Justice Act, where they were allowing black men, primarily black men that, you know, because we're disproportionately put on death row, allowing them to, if they could go to court and present to the court that racism played a factor in choosing their jury, you know, like all white juries, you know, the kind that sent my brother to the prison plantation with no evidence whatsoever that he even committed a crime. But, you know, they did pass the Racial Justice Act to try to remedy that and not put them black men to death and what have you. And soon as the Republicans got in power, What did they do? The first thing they did, repeal the Justice Act. All right. So anyway, North Carolina NAACP leader Reverend William Barber II. Okay, he's the second, not the third. Was kicked off a flight, a late flight Friday, after reportedly having a few words with a racist passenger. And the incident has led to harsh criticism of Barber by state Republicans, because it don't matter that he has disrespected position within the state. He's still black. Don't matter if his pants wasn't sagging. He's still black. It don't matter if he ain't got dreadlocks. He's still black. All right. And so, you know, that's all that matters. The president of the state NAACP was escorted off American Eagle Flight 5382 traveling from Washington, D.C. to the Raleigh-Durham International Airport after flight attendants pronounced him a quote-unquote disruptive passenger, according to the Charlotte Observer. And I have mentioned on this program before, that's like the main paper in North Carolina, the largest and one of the oldest publications here in North Carolina, the Charlotte Observer, and they practice a whole lot of racism, a whole lot of racism, especially the way that they was given their paper, making it a platform for racists all over the country to send in their letters to criticize the black quarterback, Cam Newton, and just make all kind of ridiculous statements about him. Yeah, the Charlotte Observer amplified their voices. They didn't care that he plays for the hometown team. He's black, they're white, so we're gonna practice racism. Barber said he purchased two seats on the flight so he could sit comfortably because of a painful arthritic condition that affects his spine. He was diagnosed with I've never heard of this, ankylosing spondyitis. I've never heard it, man. In his early 20s, and explained his condition to Mother Jones in a 2014 interview. The civil rights leader said the man sitting behind him began loudly complaining about quote unquote those people needing two seats and making other derogatory assertions about Barber and his disability. As I heard these things, I became more and more uncomfortable, especially since he was behind me, Barber said in a statement. The attitude with which he spoke and my experience with others who have directed similar harsh, sometimes threatening words, emails, and calls at me came to my mind, Reverend Barber said. Before Barber was removed from the flight, he said he stood to speak to the unruly passenger because he was unable to turn around to face the man because of his disability. I asked him, why was he saying such things? And I said he did not know me, my condition, and I added I would pray for him and spoke to the man as one human being to another. Being totally codified, not saying, cracker, who in the hell do you think you talking to? Don't you know I'll beat you down on this airplane? You know, I'm the wrong Negro to be messing with. No, he wasn't talking like that. He was being respectful. He was trying to make the man be sympathetic to his condition. And he even offered to pray for him. And you know, because obviously you got some spiritual issues going on. You might have a demon called racist white supremacist living in you and what have you. And so, you know, he said he spoke to the man as one human being to another. Did not matter. That strategy failed because they still kicked him off the plane when he was the one that was being verbally assaulted and terrorized by this man. That man, what was it his business if Mr. Barber needed two seats and he paid for two seats? What business is it of his? It ain't none of his business. None. He had nothing to be complaining about. All right. So an airline official asked Barber to leave the plane at that point before the crew had given safety instructions, and he was escorted off by police officers, the modern-day slave catchers, that's my term, and airline employees, who he said treated him graciously, still being codified, in his language and whatnot. He ain't say nothing bad about the slave catchers. According to the American Airlines spokesman Matt Miller, the American Eagle flight was scheduled to leave shortly after 10 p.m. Friday from Reagan National Airport when it returned to the gate before departure because of a disruptive passenger. Miller said the passenger was removed and the flight arrived 40 minutes late at Raleigh-Durham International Airport around midnight. No charges were filed, according to Kimberly Gibbs, a spokesman for the Metropolitan Washington Airports Authority. That's the law enforcement. Okay. Miller and Gibbs declined to discuss specific details of the disruption. Well, that's because they didn't have no good reason. They did not have no good reason to remove him from the plane. If there anybody they should have removed should have been the, I don't know if it was a white supremacist or just some working class racist wannabe white supremacist, but that's who should have been removed. But he was not removed. All right. So Barber said he doesn't understand why he was removed for addressing the confrontational passenger. He said he would speak with his attorneys about the incident. So, you know, I'm sure he understands. I think he's being codified here. I'm sure he understands race played a role in it. But I don't know if he knows about Needy Fuller and one of the suggestions Needy Fuller has made that I think is logical is that when these things happen, is that we don't always say it's racism unless he called him a nigger, a fat nigger, taking up two seats or something like that. He can't, you know, present any evidence that this cracker said what he said because he's black. Now, we all know that that is most likely the reason. But if we can't prove it, if we don't have no evidence to support that, then we have to take a different approach. We have to then start talking about constitutional rights and things of that nature. And human rights and things of that nature, and being strategic in our word usage. Because soon, like Mr. Fuller said, as soon as you say the R word, automatically you're going to be dismissed as just another whining Negro practicing reverse racism. So since he was obviously wasn't called a nigger, because I'm sure if he was called a nigger, he would say so. At least I hope he would say so. I know Mr. Barber, he would have said that. I don't mean I know him personally, but I've observed him long enough to know that if that occurred, he would not have a problem telling us that occurred. So he is going to let his attorneys handle that. He's going to let it, in no term did he say, no time did he say racism was practiced against him, even though he probably strongly suspects that was cause number one, because that was a white person and he's black. It doesn't matter if he was being respectful in his language, even though he was being disrespected. Doesn't matter if he was dressed like a preacher man. Didn't matter. Don't matter. That's what I'm talking about, man. We had to quit promoting things that don't work. Respectability politics don't work. Respectability counter racism don't work because it's not countering racism. We're blaming victims. That's what we're doing and saying their behavior is the cause of these things happening to them. So I hope Mr. Barber gets justice. I highly, you know, think that's going to be problematic. I don't know. He'll probably have to go through the federal courts. Because remember, here in North Carolina, they just snuck a bill in that says we can't use the state courts, or they're making it difficult for us to use the state courts to prove discrimination and what have you. You know, let them lawyers make that charge. Let them do their job. That's what they're hired to do. They know, you know, how to work that part of the system better than most of us. So let them handle that. But I hope Mr. Barber does receive justice. But, you know, already the North Carolina GOP, because they really don't like him, because he ain't one of them Negroes that just going to sit on the sidelines and allow these people to do what they do without presenting some kind of opposition and whatnot. And, you know, he also had the ability to stir up a bunch of white folks, too, and get them to go occupy Raleigh. They really don't like that Negro, you know. So they attacking him now. Michael Nix, who is the vice chair of the North Carolina GOP, said, I guess Reverend Barber thinks it's moral to inconvenience other passengers wanting to get home to see their families because he once again thinks his right to say and do whatever he wants is more important than other law-abiding citizens who conduct themselves under society's rules of civil behavior. So this goes back to what I was saying, man. Oftentimes, we're telling victims of racism to conform to the standards set forth by racists. And what H-Rap Brown say in that clip I just played during the break? That we are neither legally or morally bound to their laws because their laws keep us down. Keep them on top, keep us down. Now, of course, he's talking about in the context of warfare, all right? You know, he ain't talking about no nonviolent type stuff. He talking about it in the context of warfare, guerrilla warfare at that. But, you know, again, this how these people roll, man. Don't matter what you look like. Don't matter how you speak. Don't matter how you dress or how you're wearing your hair. Racists do what they do, regardless of what you're doing. So, Barber is among several others who have received discriminatory treatment while traveling. Last year, 7 black passengers were removed from a Spirit Airlines flight because of discrimination by white flight attendants, according to the Huffington Post. Police initially escorted a couple off the Spirit flight, accusing a man of being disruptive when he refused to get up from his seat. 5 more passengers, all black, were removed from the aircraft after they questioned the motives of police and the Spirit airline crew. Now, that's unity right there. They didn't say, ain't none of my business. I'm trying to get home to my family and, you know, I got mouths to feed and I'm just going to ignore these racists terrorizing this black man. And I'm going to say something. I'm going to stand up for him and whatnot. And, you know, if something happened to me, so be it. That's more of the attitude that we need. That's what we need. More people standing up for justice and not just simply trying to fly under the radar and whatnot. We're confronted with these situations. I think it says a lot about our character in how we respond. It's easy to, you know, respond when it's happening to you personally, but when it's happening to somebody else, that's a true measure of your character, is how you respond to what's happening to someone else and not you personally. Because personally, I ain't never been in prison. I am not a convicted felon, although I've been in jail a couple of times. Ain't never been sentenced to modern day slavery in this country, but I certainly do care about those who have. So, last thing that I would like to share with you, again, Tando Radio Show coming up at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. Make sure y'all stay tuned for that. Let me see. There was some other announcements that I had before I jumped to this last story about voter disenfranchisement in New York. Again, you know, I don't look for conflict with people. I do value dialogue and whatnot. I do respect other people's opinions, but I'm not always going to agree with you. I'm not always going to agree with you. I have my own mind. I have my own methods. Unless you can show me where you're correct and I'm incorrect, because, you know, I'm not too proud to say I'm wrong about something. But those who say that voting is a worthless activity and it doesn't matter, I disagree with that. And the number one thing that I look at that causes me to disagree with that is because They ain't never wanted us to have the right in the first place. Black Union soldiers, after they got through kicking crackers' ass all across the South, and then they told Lincoln with his deceptive behind, I'm gonna be nice. They told Lincoln, we want the right to vote for black men. You know, so they didn't want them to have it. We've had to kill for it. Not just die for it, we've had to kill for it. All right, we've killed a lot of people to be recognized as citizens. And I don't agree with that. I don't agree with proxy racism whatsoever. But, you know, the facts are the facts. We have waged war on the behalf of white supremacists in exchange for certain privileges and rights and what have you. And that's one of the ways that we got that right, is after black veterans of the Union Army demanded that right and put pressure on the political system to get that right. And then, you know, subsequent generations never stopped fighting for that right because they didn't want us to have it. If it was worthless and it didn't matter, sure, everybody can vote. Women can vote. Men can vote. Hell, we'll even let children vote because it don't matter. It don't matter. But I'm looking today, and I'm looking at my own state passing these voter ID laws when there was only 5 cases of voter fraud, and one of them was an elderly woman who voted in the morning and then forgot she voted, and then when her son came that afternoon, just asked her if she voted, she forgot. He took her to vote. She voted twice. 5 cases. That's 2 of the cases out of the 5. Excuse me, 1 of the cases out of the 5. And they use that to cite, this is why we need, you know, voter ID laws to protect the integrity of the elections and all this and that. You know, why you think they don't allow convicted felons to vote and you have to fight for that right to vote? Why do you think that? Why do they spend all this money and go through all this effort to rig elections and to disenfranchise voters to keep them out of the ballot box? Why? I mean, if it's worthless, then why would they expend so many resources to prevent something from happening that ain't gonna matter? And we've been witnessing tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of voters across this country who have been disenfranchised in this current process of choosing the Republican nomination or nominee or the Democratic nominee. Arizona, they were disenfranchising mostly Democrats, but some Republicans too. Now we're hearing in New York that most of the disenfranchisement is coming from, I must have clicked on the wrong click to get to this story, wrong link. Now we're hearing 3 million registered voters won't be able to vote in New York's primary. 27% of New York's registered voters won't be able to vote in the state's primary. New York is the 4th bluest state in the country, but has some of the worst voting laws. So this gets into the deception in saying that, oh, this only is happening in the South. It's just them, you know, Republicans, those bad Republicans don't want black people to vote and whatnot. So that's where it's occurring mostly. No, hell no. It's happening all over the place, man. In June 2013, this is an article from The Nation. In June 2013, North Carolina passed the most sweeping voter restrictions in the country, requiring strict voter ID, cutting early voting, and eliminating same-day registration, pre-registration for 16 and 17-year-olds, and out-of-precinct voting, among other political reforms. And again, when they finally got into power here in North Carolina, hadn't been in power since Reconstruction, but in 2010, they took over and been rolling ever since. Said that the state defended its cutbacks in court last summer by invoking, of all places, New York. The state of New York has no early voting as opposed to North Carolina that has 10 days of early voting, lawyer Thomas Farr said. The state of New York has no same-day registration. The state of New York has no out-of-precinct voting. The state of New York has no pre-registration. It was a cynical defense of North Carolina's law. North Carolinians don't deserve to suffer because a state 500 miles away has different laws. But it was still unnerving to hear a southern state invoke a progressive northern state to rationalize, making it harder to vote. The fact is, New York does have some of the worst voting laws in the country. So, again, if you don't vote, I'm not telling you to vote. Don't go against your conscience. Don't go against the information that you are drawing from that tells you not to vote. That is your right. But at the same time, we shouldn't be telling people not to vote, because the evidence would suggest that your vote does matter, because they jump through all kind of hoops to try to stop you from voting. They spend millions of dollars. I forgot how many millions they spent to defend that voter ID law. That litigation is still ongoing. They spend a lot of money. But what we should be doing is identifying to people in what ways the system is rigged, in what ways the system is corrupt, so that we can point these young people with all these energies to something to attack. New York, this ain't nothing new. Where has Al Sharpton been? I mean, this ain't nothing new. National Action Network, NAACP, New York, whatever. Where are all these organizations that's fighting for people's rights to vote that have not made this an issue in New York before now? They should have been putting forth legislation, putting pressure on the politicians to remedy what's wrong. So that's what I feel like. You know, identify the ways in which it's corrupt, identify the ways in which it's rigged, and then that way, you know, you can give people something to work on changing. All right. And then after they done all of that, and they see these people still practicing racism and slavery, because really that's racism is a symptom of slavery, a system of slavery. Slavery came before white supremacist codes, you know, sort of like which came first, the chicken or the egg. Well, we can point to laws that were passed in 1600s. In the colonies that first started implementing racist-based codes. They called them the slave codes. So once they've done all of that, maybe they'll get to the point to where then they are ready to become revolutionaries. They are ready to do whatever is necessary to tear down this corrupt evil system and implement one based on justice. Maybe then they will see, you know, you shouldn't be putting your life on the line serving in the United States Armed Forces to spread racism and white supremacy policies all across the planet. You just shouldn't do that and whatnot. So, you know, people do have to come to their own conclusions, but I just think that we just need to be, you know, somewhat objective when we look at these sort of things and what have you. So that's all I have for you today. Tomorrow is Wednesday. I will not be on with Black Talk Radio News, but I will be on at 8:00 p.m. Eastern time, right after Tando Radio Show. They do Wise Wednesdays on Wednesday night. So right after that, 8:00 p.m. Eastern, New Abolitionist Radio. We got an information-packed program planned for you. As I've been, you know, looking at the stuff that Max and Johannin have been, you know, working on in terms of preparing for the program and some of the things that they want to bring up tomorrow night. So don't miss that, man. Don't miss that. Recognize the fact that slavery ain't never been abolished. And I ain't talking about wage slavery. I ain't talking about debt slavery. I'm talking about real slavery. I'm talking about physical bondage. I'm talking about forcing your ass out there to work while they reap the profits. That's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about rape. on the plantation. I'm talking about murder on the plantation. I'm talking about beatings on the plantation. I ain't talking about no metaphorical type slavery. I'm talking about real slavery. Ain't never been abolished, and the 13th Amendment makes that clear if you understand English. If you understand and comprehend English and you read the 13th Amendment, you cannot walk away and say that the United States abolished slavery in 1865 with the 13th Amendment. You can't say that. Not if you comprehend English. And once you comprehend the fact that slavery ain't never been abolished, that that main pillar upon which this country was founded is still in place, then you really get a true picture of what's going on. Again, racism, what they call white supremacy, was put into place by politicians through legislation. And that did not appear in legislation until Virginia was the first colony to pass slave codes in the mid-1600s. Not soon after that, we start seeing police departments being formed out of the slave patrols and what have you. So, people, the America's original sin is slavery. They ain't never repented of it, and they still practicing it. And we need to come to that realization. I'm all for reparations, but I'm for abolishing slavery first. Let's free the slaves. Let's end slavery. Then we talk about reparations later. The best reparations you can give us is freedom. But I'm not against, you know, the reparations movement or anything. I just wish that they would start acknowledging that slavery ain't never been abolished and you still practicing slavery against people. And a lot of people need repair from that. So, recognize the fact that you live behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. It is a battlefield out there. This is a war. Casualties get created in war. Do not make yourself an easy casualty. You do need codification. You do need to adhere to some of the suggestions of Mr. Needy Fuller in his code book. Not just his code book, but, you know, we've had other elders that came along before him that was teaching us these things. We cannot make it easy for them. We can't be easy casualties on the battlefield. We don't want to be cannon fodder. So we need to behave in a certain way to move behind the enemy lines. Unless we are directly attacking the system in a meaningful way, with the aim of overturning that system and implementing something better, something based on justice, something based on respect for the human rights of all human beings. So, I'll be back again on air tomorrow night, Wednesday night, New Abolitionist Radio. Y'all stay tuned for Tando Radio Show coming up here right at 6 o'clock. Peace and blessings to all.
This is Monroe, North Carolina. The town where local NAACP president Robert Williams created headlines when he said, "Sometimes violence must be met with violence." Many asked why.
You know, we do whatever we do to survive.
Right? Drop it!
Some of the people who had thought that it would be better to settle these cases violently, I had been able to persuade them that we should use the courts and go into the courts. So this thing had boomeranged, and I was being held responsible for having brought these cases to court. There was a trial where a Negro maid had been kicked down a flight of stairs by a white man, and that this man hadn't even bothered to come to his own trial, and that he had also been acquitted. And there was a demonstration as a result of this in the courtroom. by the Negro women of the community. And they had approached me and had said, well, you said that you would see that these people would be punished because through the organization we would have constant counsel. And that if it hadn't been for you, that these people would have been punished. And they wanted to know what I would recommend that they do from then on. And so I recommended that they meet violence with violence, that Negroes must be prepared to repulse attack, that they must be willing to fight, that they must be willing to die and to kill if necessary, that there was no law, there was no 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution of equal protection in the South, and that therefore they didn't have any deterrent, so they would have to create the deterrent force themselves by meeting violence with violence.
I choose to rise, not fall. I choose to live, not die.
And welcome back. This is Scotty Reed. I am the station manager of Black Talk Radio. We're waiting on Dave to check in. He could have gotten held up. We hope that he's all right, but he's usually always on time. So things do happen. So soon as he logs in, we will get started with Tando Radio Show. All right, so stay tuned.
I love hip-hop. I said I love hip-hop. So for the love of hip-hop, let me share something with you. Listen. I got a secret, everybody come and listen. Took the money out of schools and they got rich building prisons. The people in the